Heute ist Dienstag, der 17. Februar. Herzlich willkommen zur Opening Bell, featured bei Handelsblatt, eine Sonderausgabe. Ich spreche mit Dan Niles. Er ist einer der bekanntesten Tech-Strategen an der Wall Street. In unserem Gespräch, das auf Englisch aufgezeichnet wurde, auf YouTube findet ihr die Untertitel auf Deutsch, erklärt der Gründer von Niles Investment Management, warum sich das Machtgefüge im Tech-Sektor gerade neu ordnet und weshalb so viele Anleger immer noch aufs falsche Pferd setzen. Ein Gespräch über Gewinner und Verlierer im KI-Zeitalter und darüber, wo Chancen heute attraktiver sind, als der Markt realisiert. Viel Spaß beim Zuhören. Dan Niles ist Gründer von Niles Investment Management, sehr stark fokussiert auf den Tech-Sektor. It's a pleasure after all these months to have you back.
Yeah, well, we talk all the time, but yes, it's nice to be back on your pod.
And boy, have I been thinking of you just looking at the CapEx investments that have been announced of late. What are your first thoughts when you see CapEx investment going from $150 billion in 2023 to almost $700 billion this year?
Well, I mean, it's a question of who's getting return on investment on that and what is that doing to their cash flows. And it's very different for each of those companies, which we can get into. But yeah, I mean, before Oracle reported results in mid-December, my thoughts for CapEx for this year was around up 25%, you know, maybe to 30 is where it would end up for calendar 26 for the big five guys, the three hyperscalers plus Oracle and Meta. And then after all of those CapEx increases, which just finished up, it looks like the numbers are closer to up 60% CapEx growth versus up 25 to 30. So you go, wow, those are big numbers. And so then the next thought is, well, who's going to have still positive free cash flow? And then who had their estimates go up versus go down after that? And really, that interplay determined how the stocks kind of reacted to their news. And so I think this year is going to be a very interesting year because I think, you know, the spread between the winners and the losers is just going to continue to grow.
How sustainable is that level of investment? And you already mentioned the hyperscalers, the stocks, not necessarily always reacting positively. Many of these shares are now underperformers, Microsoft, for example. Is the market starting to look at this kind of level as a capital risk to those companies?
Yes, and it should be, because not everybody's going to win. I think this really started to change in late October of last year, I think. And you can go back to Oracle, right? Oracle, in the middle of September, put up those huge numbers, and the stock was up 36% the next day. It was the biggest one-day percentage increase of any stock in history, with over $500 billion in market cap. Then, fast forward, the stock's down over 50% because people really started to question, well, how is OpenAI, which is doing run rate revenues of $20 billion exiting 2025, going to pay for $1.4 trillion in capital commitments, especially when their free cash flow is getting worse for the next several years? And you've seen that kind of concern spread to some of these other names where people are going, well, who really is in a good position in AI? Well, clearly Google is, because they have a leading model in Gemini. But you look at Amazon, they don't really have their own frontier model, right? And even if you look at Microsoft, they rely on OpenAI, which we just talked about is a risk point, which is why Microsoft's underperforming. And then you look at the earnings that came out, and it's very different in terms of growth rates for all of these different companies. Microsoft kind of disappointed with their growth rate around Azure. It actually decelerated a bit. Meanwhile, Google's growth rate in Google Cloud grew 14% faster in the current quarter than the one before. And, you know, and then you have Amazon kind of in between, where their growth rate accelerated, by a few percentage points. So, and that really kind of informed between that and the CapEx numbers, how the stocks reacted coming out of earnings. Because I think ultimately, Google will be the winner in consumer AI, not OpenAI, because they have a leading model, but they also have tremendous cash flow to fund their CapEx. They have end devices through the Android ecosystem and their own Google Pixel phones. And then obviously they have search, which is a great monetization engine. And so they really have the full stack from top to bottom, where you don't have that with some of these other players.
You know, it's kind of funny to me because there used to be a time not that long ago, maybe a year and a half ago, where people were saying that, oh my God, Google's lunch is going to be eaten by AI. Search is going to be a bloodbath. That's their source of income. And now suddenly, Google is emerging as the huge winner in the AI race. When did that switch happen? And looking at the stock now, great performer the last 12 months. When did that sentiment switch happen?
The sentiment switch happened when the Google antitrust remedies came out.
You mean the Google and Apple remedies, basically, right?
Yeah. And basically, the judge said, no problem. And so there was no breakup that needed to happen with the company, et cetera. And if you look at the stock, it just started to rip right after that, because all of a sudden Google could go on the offense instead of being on the defense. The other thing is the new Gemini models that came out are better than what ChatGPT had. And you can really go back a few years before that, which is when ChatGPT first came out at the end of 2022, Google was really like nowhere. They were still struggling with, you know, getting out models that had accurate information. They were more interested in the models being politically correct than returning correct answers. The two founders then came back to the company, Sergey and Larry, and started really working on, hey, we want to produce a model that's good and the best models. And that focus by Google again really started to get Gemini to catch up. Where now, if you look at the leaderboards across all the different metrics people use to judge AI, Google in general is at the top of the leaderboard now, not ChatGPT. And so it's really that progression from the founders coming back, no antitrust real remedies, and then the model getting to the top of the leaderboard, and you put it all together, and that's where we are today. Now, I just want to be clear on this. OpenAI is going to introduce ads. By definition, Google is going to lose some share because OpenAI is going to introduce ads into ChatGPT, right? Because they're going from 0%, right? No ads to some sort of ads. And so by definition, you're going to pull something out of the Google ecosystem and the Meta ecosystem, right? The two big leaders in online advertising. So it's going to be very interesting to see how both Google and Meta stocks respond when that does come out. And think of it kind of like when TikTok came out and the damage that caused to both Google and Meta. You could see a similar short-term reaction to those stocks. So I just want to balance out, you know, those views right now, because as we've seen recently, right, the market's moving very aggressively on news releases before we even get actual results. You would think it shouldn't matter because we all know the ads are coming out. But as we've seen recently, right, news releases can really move some of these stocks around. And Google's had a great run and the CapEx numbers have gone up a lot. They can still fund it, but your free cash flow is obviously dropping quite a bit based on the CapEx numbers moving a lot higher and the estimates really not changing very much.
Yet Google is so much more than Gemini. We have the Waymo story, now valuation at around $126 billion. You have potentially the IPO of SpaceX. Google is invested in SpaceX. If you look at Google outside of AI, what do you see looking at this company? What makes it attractive in your opinion?
You know, I think the biggest advantage they have, quite honestly, is the fact that they've got 9 different products with over a billion users each. And you can use that to train your AI models. And all of this is their data, right? So they can train on it for free because as consumers, we sort of give up our rights to have them train on it when we use these products for free. And so I think that also helps a lot of different parts of their ecosystem. And they've done a really good job, as you said, of getting into EVs, having an exposure to the space build out as well through some of these other investments that they have.
And pretty much the only big tech company that also owns their own power provider. So they're also set up very well on that angle, very smart. Let's dive into this whole cash flow debate. Amazon is going to be pretty much free cash flow negative the next couple of years. And, you know, looking back into the 90s, I remember before I go into this chart, I remember the times where people were saying, oh my God, I mean, Amazon is so highly valued, they're not even profitable. Yet Amazon understood very early that it's not about profits, it's actually about cash flow. Now it seems like everybody is chiming in on the same idea that, well, profit is not necessarily what matters. Long-term growth opportunities matters. They all seem to be following in this path. Well, going back to this chart, we see that Amazon is outspending their operating cash flow on CapEx. Meta and Google, most of it, and only Microsoft still clears CapEx. At what point, Dan, do you think the market stops rewarding revenue growth and starts punishing tanking or even negative cash flow?
It's already been doing it for the last couple of years. I mean, you can go back to mid-2024, and if you bring up a chart of all those companies, you'll see from the middle of 2024 to kind of the end of 2024, the stocks were all struggling, including NVIDIA, because if you remember, the June quarter of 2024, Amazon, Google, Microsoft all reported, they all took up their CapEx, and the estimates for all three went down a little bit. And the stocks all struggled. And they struggled for the next, you know, for basically the back half of that year. And then inference came out in 2025 and really started to ramp. And that got these companies going again. And now you're seeing a return to what happened in kind of mid-2024, which is another big increase in CapEx from all of these three players. But the estimates in general didn't go up, right? And for Amazon, they went down. And you saw the stocks react negatively off of that. So this has been going on really since the middle of 2024. But as you transition from training in 2024 to inference in 2025, that drove, you know, better performance. But now as you're moving into 2026 and you have this huge step function move up in CapEx spending from what we were thinking, which is 25 to 30% growth, now it's closer to 60% growth. And now you've got your free cash flow numbers getting revised lower. People rightfully are going, well, can all of these guys win? And especially when you see the difference in growth rates in their cloud businesses, it's a very good question to ask, because you go, wait a minute, like Google's really accelerating their growth. And meanwhile, a company like Microsoft, which has exposure to OpenAI, the growth's not really changing. And Amazon, you know, is somewhere in between. And so I think you are seeing that being questioned. And I think you're going to see it being increasingly questioned as we go through this year. That's why I'm coming into this year, I thought it'd be a very volatile year. I honestly thought we'd have more of these problems near the end of the year, because at the beginning of the year, my thought was, well, OpenAI is going to raise that $100 billion, Anthropic's going to raise their tens of billions, and people will get optimistic again. That clearly has not been the case to start off. And so it tells you that investors rightfully are getting more concerned in terms of who's going to ultimately win, because not all of these companies can. I mean, that's just not the way it works in tech, right? If you think back to the tech bubble, how many winners did you have in e-commerce? Really one, Amazon. What about in social? Really one, Meta. You know, what about in streaming? Really one, Netflix. What about in audio? That's really Spotify. And so you've only had really one winner per vertical. And right now the market's obviously saying, oh, you know, we've got 5 to 10 companies that are all going to win, that unless something is very different about this cycle versus the last, that's probably not the way it's going to work out.
So winner takes it all. That's also one of the reasons Uber is having issues in regards to Waymo eating a market share in the robotaxi area, including Tesla, which is a whole debate to itself. But I want to stick to the AI story. Looking at OpenAI, Oracle and Microsoft, to a certain extent, Microsoft is they're both a bit of a proxy for OpenAI. There's been a certain sentiment bound. OpenAI is claiming that ChatGPT growth is now back to monthly rate of over 10%. And Wall Street is hoping that with $100 billion they're raising in additional funds, that the financing of all those deals, including Oracle, are a bit safer. Plus, you have $20 billion in stocks being placed, plus debt is being issued. What is your take on OpenAI also taking the rise of Anthropic and Gemini into account?
Well, I think OpenAI's got a huge problem because, for one simple reason, Google has trained 5 billion users on the planet that you can enter in a question and get an answer for free. OpenAI gets over 50% of their revenues from consumers. It's going to be very hard for them to convince people to pay, especially when you're getting answers from Google for free. And Google doesn't need to worry about that, right? So that's the first issue with OpenAI. The other issue is Anthropic, because Anthropic gets 75% of their revenues from corporate. Well, corporations are used to paying for things, right? So they're looking at Anthropic and saying, of course we've got to pay. And Anthropic right now has the best coding models or assistants out there. And so corporations really like it. That's why Anthropic is growing so fast. And meanwhile, OpenAI is playing catch up in that market. So OpenAI is really wedged between Google on the consumer side and Anthropic on the enterprise side. Meanwhile, their cash burn is getting higher each year for the next several years. That's why I think OpenAI's got a big issue. And Anthropic also, which I found interesting, and you may have seen the Super Bowl ad that they had on this, Anthropic has said, hey, we're not going to put ads on our platform. OpenAI has to put ads on their platform because they have to figure out a way to monetize the 95% of consumers that right now are not paying to use ChatGPT. And so it shows you the different strengths of these companies by what they're having to do, right, as well. And so that's why, yes, short term, do I think everybody will get all excited about, you know, OpenAI raising that money? That's what I thought coming into the year. Obviously, that's not the way it's played out the last month and change. And so that tells you something. Is there going to have to be a bounce because things got very oversold? Obviously, but it's never a straight line down or up. But that's how I'm kind of thinking about this if I look out a couple of years from now in terms of OpenAI relative to their competitors out there.
What risks coincide for the market if OpenAI can't deliver?
Well, I think we've seen it with Oracle, right? Stocks down over 50% from their highs back in middle of September, and the stock's actually below, significantly below where it was when they announced that huge quarter back in the middle of September, and they announced that OpenAI was roughly $300 billion of that $455 billion or so in remaining performance obligations. So I think we've seen the damage that'll be caused, not if they can't meet those commitments.
Yet you're not really bearish on Oracle, are you? I mean, the company itself seems to have a pretty solid business model. Or does that change your opinion about the stock?
Oracle had, as I said, you know, at that time back in the middle of September, over 50% of their revenues related to OpenAI. And then as OpenAI kept on signing these deals, people were like, wait a minute. Like, how is OpenAI going to meet all these commitments? Now, if you sit there and you talk about software in general, AI is going to disrupt a lot of the models. But I think the parts of software that are going to be the best positioned is one, database. And the reason is that's where all your customer information resides. So you can't afford to have that screwed up, right? Because that's vital to your company. So I think names like Oracle and SAP over the longer term should do better. The other sector that I think should do better is security, because if you get hacked and you tell people, oh yeah, we used our own vibe-coded security, you're going to get crucified, right? You can't afford to have your company get hacked and have all that vital information, you know, go out. So I think that's the other area that's going to be in good shape. Everything else, I think you've got a problem, because that can be somewhat replaced by a lot of AI-generated apps that companies code themselves to potentially get out of paying these big licensing fees and per-seat fees that go up every year. Because software has two issues, right? If you make an employee more productive, you hire less employees, then you don't have as many people to sell software subscriptions to, right? So that's one problem. The second problem is, can you just replace the software altogether? That second piece is where I think companies like Oracle or SAP, you know, on the database side, as well as companies ultimately like security companies, should be able to fare better. It doesn't mean they're not going to get impacted as well, but on the margin, they should do better. And that's kind of how I'm thinking about it longer term. But let me make this very clear, and I've said this for, you know, a while now, I hate exposure to OpenAI.
And so anything, so hard, you explained to me,
it's hard to be bullish on Oracle when that's your overriding view, given the amount of exposure Oracle has to OpenAI.
In the prior phone conversation we had, you painted a really interesting picture. You look at the universe as the Google universe and the companies in that universe, and you look at the OpenAI universe and the proxies around them. Do you see performance differences looking at those two universes?
Oh, absolutely. The names associated with the Google ecosystem since October 29th are up around 25% or so. It's probably changed the last few days, obviously, but that's roughly right. The names around the OpenAI ecosystem, so names like Oracle and SoftBank and Microsoft, et cetera, those names are down about 20, 25% since then. So there's a massive difference over that period of time, which again speaks to the fact that investors are starting to really differentiate between one ecosystem, which is Google, and another ecosystem, which is OpenAI.
Microsoft is pretty much the only company that basically earns a higher operative income than CapEx investments. Yet the stock is not really performing that well, and you're seeing something very unusual. Looking at the forward PE ratio, the valuations, Microsoft is actually cheaper than IBM. That's something you don't really see that often. Is there a risk, Dan, that many of the hyperscalers are going to be looked at as old school infrastructure companies, asset heavy, much lower margins? Software usually has very high margins. Is that a temporary situation?
No, I mean, it is the new situation going forward, right? I mean, it's interesting. If you look at the three big hyperscalers, so Amazon, Microsoft, and Google, their combined CapEx in 2023 was $122 billion. Each of those names by themselves is spending more than that, or is forecasted more than that in calendar 26. So, you know, you've got Amazon up at $200 billion, Google up at $180 billion, and Microsoft by itself, you know, they didn't give an actual number, but you can interpolate it somewhere around $147 billion, let's say. So each by themselves is bigger than that $122 billion of them all combined in calendar 23. And so it's definitely becoming more asset heavy, and you have to put a lower multiple on. Because these are not the same companies that they were before. And this really goes back to, you can't unwind a trade that's been going on since really August of 2011, when Marc Andreessen put that piece out in the Wall Street Journal about how software will eat the world. Since then, for the last 14 years, software's been the place to be invested. This meltdown's happened for 5 months. And it's going to take longer than 5 months for people to adjust to the fact that, to your point, Marcus, which is a really good one, that these aren't the same businesses, because they're now asset heavy and cash flow light. And before they were, you know, asset low and cash flow heavy.
We're going to look at software in a minute, but I want to bring up one topic that I think a lot of investors or retail investors don't really have on the radar. A lot of the hyperscalers are not only witnessing a much lower cash flow or negative cash flow in case of Amazon, but we are also witnessing a dramatic drop in announced stock buybacks. Amazon didn't buy any stock back since 2022, if I'm not mistaken. We also see Meta reducing buybacks. Microsoft increased the buybacks, but we are still below the levels we saw about 3 years ago. And at the same time, you see more issuance of debt. You see more issuance of equity. How does that affect shareholder return in those specific hyperscalers?
Yeah, I mean, they're supporting buybacks, etc., by issuing debt. That's not what you want to see. Before, they were able to do buybacks or have small dividends by their cash flows. And so the total shareholder return, by definition, is going down. And it's going down by a lot, right? You can just say, well, the amount that they increased their CapEx by, you can reduce shareholder returns by that, because some of that gets taken out of dividends, some of that gets taken out of share buybacks, and there's less to reinvest going forward. So I think those are all the things you have to think about. And this is going to be a long process, right? These resets don't just happen in a few months. And when you go through these changes, like the transition from on-premise and software to the cloud, there was a lot of issues with software companies that struggled with that transition. And obviously we figured out in hindsight who the winners were. That's what we're trying to do now with AI, which is, okay, who are the winners in software as we go through this transition to AI? This is probably going to be even more disruptive than that transition to the cloud was. And so, yeah, we'll have to see how that turns out, but having shareholder total returns, as you just laid out, go down, that doesn't make people want to stick around and find out, because you're changing the terminal multiple in the sense that you don't know who's going to be the winner 5 to 10 years from now. And then you have two issues at the same time, which is if employees are more productive, don't need as much software because I'm not going to hire as many people. And the second part of it is, am I even going to need the software if AI can write it for corporations by itself?
If you look at the software stocks, there is a certain sense of panic. Now, you and I have been around Wall Street a very long time, and you yourself are saying that it is a process. The software sector seems a bit oversold. If you, for example, look at the number of software stocks trading above the 200-day moving average, which is pretty much none at this point, and stocks have cratered quite a bit. If you look at the revenue multiples in the software group, we are now pretty much at a record low. If you look at the free cash flow multiples, you're also at an all-time low. And interestingly, when you look at The pullback seems to be based on a valuation repricing and not on earnings, because revenue growth for the group is still in this year around 11.5 to 12%. The software is re-rating for sure, but are we overdoing this re-rating?
It's like going back to 01-02, right? If you look at that period, it took 2.5 years for the S&P to find the bottom. So every 3 months, the stocks would get killed, then they'd rally, and then they go down again. And you had 7 rallies in the S&P that averaged 14% each over 2.5 years, on your way to losing 49% in the S&P. And I think that's what you're going to be in for in software, which is, you're going to get these vicious bounces followed by these vicious sell-offs. And it's going to take 1 to 2 years to sort out the winners and the losers. Because right now, you're right, the estimates haven't actually come down for software as a whole. But that's because the estimates are for this year and next year. What people are worried about is not necessarily this year and next year. What they're worried about is 5 years from now, how do things look? And, you know, companies don't know, right? It's a fallacy to assume that these CEOs have any idea how this is going to turn out. The example I always give is Cisco, right? Cisco in 2000 thought their revenues were going to grow 30 to 50% per year for many years. And then I think 2 years later, they had two negative years of revenue growth for in their fiscal years back to back. And then even when they were going through that, they said, well, yeah, but coming out of it, we think we're going to grow, you know, 30% plus. And in fact, the growth rates coming out of that was half those levels. And so I think for those who, like me or you, who have been through, you know, the meltdown in 2001, 2002, like there was no question the internet was growing in 2001, 2002, right? But the winners and the losers, I mean, Amazon stock went down 95% from peak to trough. 95, while their revenues were growing. So that's kind of what you're dealing with. And that's why I said, for me, when I think that there's a potential, when I look out longer term, I think the database related names are where I'd rather be invested. And I think the security names are rather where I'd be invested. And everything else, I think, ends up, you know, in big trouble to some degree or another as we go through this transition over the next couple of years, because there's no question that the coding capabilities to produce your own software internally as an enterprise have gone way up due to companies like Anthropic being out there. And by the way, Gemini's, you know, Google's got some pretty good products too, as well in that regard. It's just you have to be a much higher level engineer to use them, because you have so many more bells and whistles involved. So the, Google's not that bad on enterprise either, quite honestly.
For you as an investor, as a seasoned tech investor since many, many decades at this point, when you look at the market, what sector are you actually focusing on?
I'm focused on hardware because I don't really care who wins if I own NVIDIA and Broadcom both. And I don't care how they fund it if I own them both. And what I mean by that is if you believe that these companies are going to spend a lot on GPUs, then NVIDIA will benefit. If you think these companies will spend a lot more on custom ASICs, then Broadcom will benefit. We may be wrong on which one of those two benefits, but the one thing you know for certain is CapEx has gone from 25 to 30% growth to now we're looking at closer to 60. And so if I own them both, doesn't matter. You're going to make money. The other nice thing is that their price-to-earnings ratios, especially NVIDIA, if you look at it, it's in the mid-20s. The market's only a couple of points below that. But NVIDIA's revenues are expected to grow north of 50%. And Broadcom's a little bit more expensive, but the growth is somewhat similar. And so for me, that's the easiest way, because they're also going to benefit if OpenAI raises all this funding and Anthropic raises all their funding as well, right? It's not just going to be the software names. The hardware names will benefit as well. So for me, that's the easiest way to play a bounce in the AI-related names is through the hardware side of it versus the software side, where you're still trying to figure out who's going to get disintermediated and who isn't. At the end of the day, you're going to either use an ASIC or you're going to use a GPU to run all this AI on.
Thank you very much for your precious time, and I'm looking forward to our next conversation. Thank you very much, Dan.
It's always a pleasure talking to you, Marcus. Thank you.
Und jetzt der obligatorische und BaFin-sichere Risikohinweis von Mr. Markus Koch.
Meine Damen und Herren, liebe Aufsichtsbehörden, ich darf Sie darauf hinweisen, dass die Inhalte in diesem Video ausschließlich der allgemeinen Information dienen und keiner Empfehlungen zum Erwerb oder der Veräußerung bestimmter Finanzinstrumente und somit keine Anlageberatung darstellen. Insbesondere können Wall Street Correspondents und der Vortragende nicht einschätzen, inwiefern die im Video gemachten Empfehlungen ihren Anlagezielen, ihrer Risikobereitschaft und Verlusttragfähigkeit entsprechen. Wer also auf Basis von Informationen in diesem Video etwaige Anlageentscheidungen trifft, trifft diese ausschließlich auf eigene Verantwortung und eigene Gefahr. Und das wiederum bedeutet, dass weder Wall Street Correspondents noch der Vortragende, das ist immer noch dieser Mann hier, für Verluste haften, die sie dadurch erleiden, dass sie Anlageentscheidungen aufgrund von Informationen oder Kommentaren in diesem Video getroffen haben. Vielen Dank für die Aufmerksamkeit und weiterhin einen erfolgreichen Handelstag. Thank you.